Hi, everyone. It's Ziva. I was supposed to have an interview with someone today, and it just didn't seem to work out with the schedule. So I have this slot of time in front of me. I'm with my equipment all set up in my house by myself, and I feel like it's maybe a good opportunity for me to just speak directly to you, and instead of having someone else on to talk about their journey, for me to talk a little bit about mine. I think that one of the reasons why I'm so interested in doing this podcast, it's as if I'm looking to better understand how we're maybe wired to pursue certain experiences and paths in our lives. And at the same time, there's a counter intuitive idea that makes me believe that there's no such thing as wiring and predestination, and that it's mostly about having experiences that allow for small shifts to occur. Maybe there's a tension in my mind and in my story that I'm looking to resolve by asking people about their own stories. So to sum it up, the question would be, are we predestined to pursue a particular path, especially when we wind up making certain decisions that we can't rationalize? They seem to come from a deeper place. Could there be invisible forces at work, referring to, you know, epigenetics, some DNA that's already programmed in us, a curiosity that maybe comes down through the generations that gives us a certain kind of impulse that we can't really explain? Or is it really something that has to do with each individual on their own being autonomous and being somewhat responsible and in control of their decisions? I'm really interested in the play on these two ideas, and I really think that there's no one answer, that's a combination of the two. And so the podcast is about exploring those two ideas of where do we get the impulses and the desire and the motivation to explore the life in the way that we do, and can we at certain points in our lives take a little bit of a step back and retrace our steps and try to see how there's a thread emerging that connects the dots between all of our experiences. To start there, let's just say that ever since I was a little girl, I had a very inexplicable urge to be somewhere else. And that somewhere else manifested and expressed itself in what I imagine Europe was like, and more specifically France, and more specific than that, Paris. My family was all based in Brooklyn at the time. I was born in Manhattan. My parents were both New York City babies. My mom grew up in Brooklyn. My dad grew up on the Lower East Side in Manhattan, and then eventually moved to Brooklyn as well. So both sets of grandparents were living in Brooklyn. My parents were from Brooklyn. I grew up in a predominantly Russian Italian neighborhood in Gravesend. So Gravesend really kind of sounds as festive as it was. Not to shame Gravesend in any way, there was nothing harmful that happened in Gravesend, but it was a neighborhood where there wasn't very much going on. There were kind of low-income housing projects that I lived in with my mom starting when I was 3 after my parents separated. I had mostly Russian friends, specifically my best friend at the time, Rachel. I spent a lot of time in her mirrored apartment with her family, who was very welcoming to me. My upbringing was resumed in lots of comings and goings to my friend's house, going to school. There was a Key Foods, there was a bagel store, there was a Chinese restaurant. And at some point, I really just felt like there was not much for me to do. And my mother has always been someone who has a romantic notion of art and literature. She was an artist, she was a sculptor, and she eventually became an art teacher. So she exposed me to a lot of music, classical music. She talked in a very kind of glowing way about European artists and always wanted to expose me to that. When I was a little girl, I did not want to play any classical music, but she insisted that I play the piano. And then when I wanted to give up the piano, she encouraged me to play the violin. And I didn't really want to play the violin, but I had to choose something. And actually what happened was I became okay at it. And I got into a special school called Mark Twain for the Gifted and Talented, which is a very modest name. And when I got in, I was put into the orchestra. And right away, I realized that there was another side to music playing because there was a community around it. I had been playing the violin by myself and it was a pretty miserable endeavor. But when I got to this school, I had this wonderful teacher named Ray Liotta, like the actor, but it wasn't the actor. And he called all of the students by their last name. So I became Belel. And my best friend was the Gerf for Gerfel. And I suddenly found other kids who were my age who were interested in music in a way that was a little bit more mature for our age. And he really instilled that in us. He kind of upped the level of the intensity of the discipline and really made it a requirement for us to take it seriously and to practice in a way that was disciplined and intentional. He really encouraged us to give all of ourselves. And we, as a result, got really good. And I started enjoying the fact that I was able to play music that sounded wonderfully and that we were able to play pieces that were very sophisticated and brought a lot of emotion to our education. So I went into sidetrack there about the music, but I think that there's something about music that connects me to French. Let me explain. So by playing music, one of the things that you do is you're training your ear to notice subtleties of sound and to match what you hear and what you want to create with your instrument to a particular ideal. And at the same time that I'm playing music, I'm also learning French. What happened was when I got into middle school, so this is the same moment that I'm taking violin more seriously, I choose French as a foreign language. We had the option of choosing French or Italian or Spanish, and definitely Spanish and Italian would have been more practical because those were the languages that I was surrounded by. But there was something out about French already that I was drawn to. And I still don't know why. That is maybe the first kind of big question mark along the path. Like, what was it about French that made me lean towards it? I think that just purely in terms of the sound of the language, I was more drawn to it than Italian or Spanish. Nothing against Italian or Spanish. I think they're both beautiful languages, but there was something about the pleasantness of the way French sounded to me, especially, maybe here's a connection as I'm speaking, especially since where I grew up in Brooklyn, the accent, let me tell you, wasn't so great. There was a lot of Brooklyn accent. Sometimes if I get really drunk, I could turn it up, but I actually decided to train myself to not even have the accent. But as you can tell, it's a little bit there. So there was something about the Brooklyn accent that even though I think it's super cool, at the time, I did not think it was very beautiful. And maybe there was a desire to have a different sound come out of my mouth that drew me to French. And for me, French was just the most beautiful sounding language that existed. So combination of the sound, like literally the sound that my ear is training itself to be able to pick up because I'm playing music, as well as a desire for something to contrast with the accents that I'm surrounded by every day, made French somewhat of a reach language and a reach sound that I aspire to be able to master. So that's how I wound up in French class. And there was another thing that was interesting. In French class, they had us watch this series called French in Action, which was a really kind of progressive way of teaching kids to learn a language, because they had us watch French actors in real day situations speaking French. That was practical French, everyday French. And then the instructor would break it down and tell us what each expression really meant. So there was a certain exposure to everyday French life. And I think that beyond just learning the language, what I saw with my eyes really appealed to me. So there was a character in the series named Mireille, I think was her name. And she had a petit copain, a little boyfriend named Robert. And the two of them would traipse around Paris. They would go to the parks. They would walk through the parks after school. They would sit and chit-chat. And sometimes there was this weird mime that would follow them around. But Mireille, she would also go and have drinks with her friends in the cafes. You would see her back in the house with her family. They would go on vacations together. And I, maybe also coming from a house where I spent a lot of time by myself because my parents were separated and then divorced, and I'm an only child, that was also very appealing. I kind of envied Mireille's lifestyle, traipsing around Paris and speaking French and having her French friends and family. So I latched onto that image. And I think maybe at that point is when there was a flag planted in my brain that was like, maybe it's great in France. Maybe you should be in France. Maybe that's where you'd be happy. And as I went on with my studies and my life, there was nothing other than that that upstaged France. There was never another interest or calling or dream vision that I had for myself than the Paris one. And so later, as I went into high school, I continued on with French. I also learned Latin, so that helped with some of my French vocabulary too. I wound up dropping the violin because the orchestra at my high school was terrible. And then when I got to college, I continued with French. And eventually in junior year, I decided that I was going to be an art history major, because art history, I found out, was a sure bet in terms of getting accepted to a study abroad program. I had been debating about whether or not to major in film, because I was really into film too. But when I found out that if I was an art history major, I would likely be able to go abroad, I quickly made my decision to major in art history. And I put together an application, and lo and behold, it was accepted, and I was off to Paris. But that actually wasn't the first trip to Paris I had taken. So backtrack a couple of years, when I was turning 16, so before going to college, my mom said to me, listen, you're turning 16, you can do one of two things. We can do a sweet 16 party, which is something that all of my friends have been doing, which would be a fun night of partying. Or for that amount of money that we would spend on your party, we could spend 2 weeks in Europe, including Paris. It was a no-brainer. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and we went to Paris. During that trip to Paris, something occurred. First of all, we had gone to London for a week, and we were also on this trip with my best friend, Helen, the GERF. Remember, I referred to her when we were talking about violin and the orchestra. So we spent a week in London, and it just like, it was fun, but there was nothing I particularly latched onto. I didn't like the food. the weather sucked. And to tell you the truth, I just thought that people didn't look very healthy. And we then made it over to Paris. And I cannot explain to you how radically opposite that city felt to me. I literally felt all of my cells respond to the city. My senses were just going berserk, from the beauty of the architecture to the colors of the fruit at the market to the peculiar bathtub at the hotel that we were in that didn't have a shower curtain. We got water everywhere, but there was something about the legs on, the feet on the bathtub that was just so chic and refined, to going to the restaurant where we had fish with faces for the first time, and navigating the language in my very rudimentary way, and feeling that I just connected with something and felt good about being there. I can't quite put words into it, but it's something that I've spoken to other people who have lived abroad in Paris specifically for a long time. And there's just a feeling of wanting to stay because you feel better about yourself there, that you feel more yourself there. And I think that that's what I felt that first trip, is I just felt more Ziva in Paris, that there was a desire to get to know this other version of myself in this new environment. Like this Ziva, this version of Ziva in this environment was a lot closer to the true Ziva, to the one that was maybe, you know, several layers underneath the Ziva who was living in Brooklyn, who was doing her day-to-day, who was going to school, who had her routine, who was going back home, spending a lot of time, you know, in the house by herself or with some of her friends. There was something about this place that brought me out into another dimension, like another dimension of myself was revealed to me in Paris. And it just gave me a sense of direction, a sense of calling and belonging, even though I could barely string three words together. I think I even went to the Rodin Museum and tried to buy tickets to go in. My mom was like, hey, you girls go up. You know, you've been taking French for years. Go get some tickets. And the woman asked how old we were. And I couldn't even get the number out of my face. And I just like put up my fingers and tried to add it all up. So it added up to 16. So that was humiliating, but it didn't matter. I think that when you feel like you belong someplace, all of the small embarrassments just don't add up to anything that discourages you from keeping with it and deciding to get better. And that was the first feeling that this was the place that I belonged and that I wanted to come back to. And so with that same friend, Helen, 2 years later, when we were 18, my mom allowed us to, well, me and Helen's mom also agreed to take a European backpacking trip, just the two of us. So if you could imagine, this is now in 1992. And the two of us, before we go off to college, we take a little European trip and we go and we explore different parts of Europe. We went to Amsterdam, we went to Paris, we went to Grenoble, we went down to Nice, we went to Italy. And once again, Paris just was the best. It was just the place where I felt the best. And that's also when I made a decision. I was like, when I get to college, I got to figure out how I can come back. And so now we're back in university and I decide that I'm going to spend a year abroad, hopefully in Paris. But that trip, it turns out that I get into a program and they put me in a home with a woman who is a single mom. She's got two older sons who are one was going off to college, the other one was studying in Paris, and so he was home. But she really needed the money that having a student who was living abroad provided for into the income. So she was hosting families, hosting foreign students in her house so that she could earn some additional money because she really needed it. She slept in the only common room that there was. So I had my bedroom. There were two other bedrooms, and the living room was actually where she slept. So there was no common area. And I was living in the 13th in a high-rise apartment building, and it was not the vision of Paris that I really had for myself. I had wanted to be included in some boisterous, energetic, fun, foreign family that was going to whisk me away on the weekends and take me to other exotic places, go to the beach, have picnics in the park, go to visit extended family outside of France, outside of Paris. But we never did any of that. I was actually pretty much by myself for most of the time I was there. And I also found a French family where they had very little interest in any kind of cooking. So my host mother didn't know how to cook at all. I just assumed that French people throughout the country just had this, intuitive way of whisking beautiful things together. But she really had no interest in cooking and no real understanding of what was fresh. So it was pretty disastrous. And I also was vegetarian at the time. And once they, in a mocking way, ate horse meat in front of me. So let's just say I didn't feel so great in this host family. But what was amazing is that I made some incredible friendships with other students who are on the same program as me that still to this day are some of my closest friends. And we wound up going out and enjoying the city and making it into our total playground. And so I feel like actually because my time at the house was so mediocre, it pushed me out and into exploring and getting to know the city and going to exhibitions and having picnics and traveling to other cities. And all of this was just more and more of a confirmation that this is the place that I wanted to be. And there was never a moment where I said, because of the living situation, this is not where I want to be. It was actually the opposite. It was like, okay, the living situation sucks, but I'll be back and I'm going to do it my way. And so after I finished my time in Paris, I went back to New York and I finished my degree in art history. And I was working in New York after I studied. I had around 3 or 4 years where I was living in the city. I had a string of different jobs. I worked at my stepdad's video store, Allen's Alley. I had a cousin who was working at Calvin Klein. I had a job folding jeans at Calvin Klein shop-in-shops that were opening up around the country. I eventually got a job working at a film and photo archive. And while I was there, I just felt like I was risking sinking deeper and deeper into a life in New York that was fine. I had wonderful friends. My family was there. I was not in the best relationship, and that was definitely something that was compelling me to make a big move. I just said to myself, if I don't get out now, I don't think I'm ever going to have the courage to do it. I'm just going to sink deeper and deeper and deeper into a lifestyle that I don't want. And what was really the big impetus for me is that I wound up going into therapy when I was 24. And it was the first time that I really talked to someone outside of my friend circle and my family circle about this dream of mine to move to France. But my therapist in the beginning, Yael, she acknowledged it and she was like, okay, well, let's talk about what's going on here. And we wound up spending much more of our time together talking about what was happening where I was in New York, my relationship specifically with my then boyfriend, with my parents, and my feelings about who I wanted to be, the changes I wanted to make. And after around 6 months of doing some deep work in the place I was in, Paris reemerged as a possibility because my friend Jessica, who I met while I was living abroad in Paris, had already moved to Paris after college and she was visiting. And if you want to know more about Jessica, she's the first person I interviewed in season one of On Becoming, who was in town with her newly minted French husband, Charles, who she met after college. She and Charles were saying to me, like, listen, Ziva, you're supposed to be in Paris. You love that city. When you decide to come, you could stay with us. You have an open invitation to stay with us, stay on our couch. Do not let where you would stay hold you back from pursuing your dream. And so they really gave me this open invitation to pursue my dream. And I still credit them 24 years later, every single year that it's the anniversary of my leaving New York, for really giving me that, you know, kick in the pants to get myself out of my life, even though there was so much I needed to kind of reckon with in terms of closing down that chapter of my life. And to say that it was easy and to say that it was fluid would be a total lie and disservice to really how painful it can be to make a decision that whisks you away from what's familiar to you, even though you know that that's what's right for you. I still had to pack up my things, you know, extract myself from the relationship I was in without really knowing how long I was going to stay in Europe, but I knew I needed some time. There was also all of these relationships, these friendships that were so meaningful to me, that still are so meaningful to me, and just wondering, like, what's going to happen there. It was really the hardest thing I've ever done, I think. I mean, I've done some hard things since, but I don't know if I would have been able to do those hard things had I not been able to do the hard thing of leaving everything familiar to me in order to pursue a dream of moving to France indefinitely. So it was a very, very teary departure, And the first few weeks of being in Paris were a mix of feeling absolute exuberation and exhilaration, as well as layers of grief, feeling like they were bubbling up to the surface and kind of washing over me at various moments. Also feeling completely disoriented, like, okay, so I'm here. How long am I going to be here? What am I supposed to do? So much of who we are sometimes is defined by the limitations that we're pushing against, the thing that we don't want. We lean into that struggle as a way of defining a longing inside of us. But when you no longer have that constraint in your day-to-day, and you're just given somewhat of a blank page to create the perfect day, for example, in the perfect city, in, you know, ideal conditions, with summertime, I was living with friends, rent-free, I had a small budget, but I had all my needs met, and it's kind of like, well, who am I going to be now if I can be anything? And that's when a whole other challenge begins, is when you're not defined by what you can have, but you are defined and you will define yourself by what you want. Thank you for listening.
So appreciative of having your time and your attention, and would love to hear anything you have to say, any feedback, any questions, any requests. You can leave me a voice message if you go to speakpipe.com/onbecoming. That's speakpipe, speakpipe.com/onbecoming. I promise to get back to you. If this podcast has touched you, inspired you, transformed you in any way, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast listening platform.